This is the Breaker.News podcast for January 21st, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features such as the Is It Just Me commentary. Around the Rim, headlines from around the Pacific Rim. Cascadia Calling, headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature, this week, Quick Wins Gets to Court. And The Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to someone, or something, who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or was the choice of venue for the British Columbia Court Services Branch Leadership Conference a bad idea? The Breaker.News exclusively reported that the Ministry of the Attorney General spent $90,000 for travel, accommodations, and food and drink for nearly 200 court managers and court sheriffs in early November at River Rock Casino Resort. That's the same Richmond gambling haven under investigation for money laundering by high rollers from China. Many of them claim that they're either housewives or students, but some admit that they're involved in the real estate and construction industries. The meeting was also held in 2016 when BC Liberal Suzanne Anton was Attorney General and Mike De Jong, who was running for party leadership, was the Minister of Gambling. It is not known whether NDP Attorney General David Eby was consulted. His spokespeople did not respond to The Breaker. Deputy Attorney General Richard Fife approved the meeting a month in advance in October. His underling, Linda Kavanagh, made the booking in July, just 4 days before Premier John Horgan was sworn in. Guest speakers included the Chief Justice of the BC Supreme Court and the Chief Judge of the Provincial Court. Gambling is legal in BC, and many people do it for fun. The profits from gambling go back to community and sports groups, and the companies that run the casinos, like Great Canadian Gaming, employ hundreds of people. But when there is more than a whiff of criminality coming from the shores of the Fraser, it is more than a little bit iffy for the Attorney General's ministry to be sending staff there on a taxpayer-funded junket. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim, where we look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. First stop is Los Angeles, where Meg James of the LA Times reports that publisher Ross Levinson to take unpaid leave of absence. The paper's parent company, Tronc, is investigating allegations of inappropriate conduct while Levinson was an executive at other companies. Tronc hired the law firm Sidley Austin to review the allegations contained in a detailed National Public Radio report. NPR found that Levinson was a defendant in two sexual harassment lawsuits before he joined The Times last August. In addition, NPR reported that Levinson allegedly used sexist and homophobic language when talking with colleagues and subordinates. Meanwhile, journalists at The Times have voted 248-44 to form a union, a first for the 136-year-old newspaper known for its opposition to organized labor. Workers will be represented by the Washington, D.C.-based News Guild Communications Workers of America. In Hong Kong's South China Morning Post, Stephen Chen reports three possible outcomes from East China oil spill, according to Chinese scientists. A vessel carrying nearly 1 million barrels of ultralight, highly flammable crude oil collided with a freighter east of Shanghai on January 6th. After burning for about a week, it exploded and sank 150 meters to the seabed midway between Zhejiang Province and Japan's Ryukyu Islands. Environmental damage could be limited within the region, or damage could be negligible. Or pollutants could reach the west coast of North America. Pollutants from the vessel Sanxi could be carried by some of the most powerful ocean currents, according to Zhu Chaohua, a researcher at the State Oceanic Administration in Hangzhou, Zhejiang. The North Pacific Current heads east to British Columbia, where it splits into two courses, one going north to Alaska and the other turning south to California. And Andrew Kubaridis in news.com.au reports, Malaysia Airlines flight MH122 forced to make emergency landing in Alice Springs. Terrified passengers on board the Malaysia Airlines flight forced to make an emergency landing at Alice Springs were told to, quote, brace for impact, and they thought they were about to die. The A330-300 landed in Alice Springs at 5:46 p.m. local time with emergency crews on standby. Before it landed, passengers begged the flight crew about what was going to happen, but were reportedly told, we don't know. The flight attendant came on and said the pilot will give a 30-second warning before impact, Dana Edwards told Channel 9. One of the crew stopped near us and one guy said, are we crashing or are we landing? The crew member said, I don't know. We were just bracing for the worst. I thought I was going to die. The plane was heading to Kuala Lumpur from Sydney and was over Western Australia airspace when the plane began shaking. Meanwhile, Texas-based Ocean Infinity is the latest to search for MH370, the Malaysia Airlines flight that vanished with 239 people on board almost 4 years ago. The company could be paid as much as $70 million if it discovers the wreckage believed to be at the bottom of the Indian Ocean. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time for Cascadia Calling on the Breaker.News podcast, where we look at news headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. Lindsay Burton of the Seattle PI reports that tech reporter guilty of rape scheme gets nearly 3 years. Michael John Matt Hickey used a porn recruiting front to lure women into his apartment. A King County Superior Court judge gave the Seattle-based tech reporter, who pleaded guilty to raping several women, 34 months. Hickey, 41, pleaded guilty in October to reduced charges. Senior Deputy Prosecutor Carla Carlstrom acknowledged at sentencing that the attacks he was accused of could have been hard to prove in trial because the victims were blacked out after being given mixed drinks made by Hickey. It was part of a common scheme with Hickey. He would bring a woman to his apartment and fix her a drink. Those women would become dizzy or black out and wake up to being raped or finding evidence of being raped. For his part, Hickey's attorney James Bible, yes, his attorney's name James Bible, described Hickey as socially awkward and bullied throughout his youth. He went on to write for Forbes and Gizmodo and contributed to The Stranger several years ago. Though Bible said he could have won Hickey's case, Hickey himself put a stop to investigations and agreed to plead guilty. Hickey reportedly claimed he didn't want other women to be hurt or for men to think that his conduct was okay. The judge thanked the women who spoke for their fortitude. State Attorney General Bob Ferguson also sued Hickey in December 2016 for violations of the Washington Consumer Protection Act and the Commercial Electronic Mail Act. He settled the lawsuit in March 2017 when a judge ordered that he pay more than $332,000. In Portland, Elliot Njus of the Oregonian reports that hoverboard inventor Shane Chen takes another crack at transportation's last-mile problem. From his workshop in Camas, Washington, Shane Chen watched his brainchild take off like none of his other inventions. Chen had patented his two-wheeled self-balancing HoverTrax scooter back in 2012. There was just one problem. Chen was stuck on the sidelines. The market was flooded with knockoffs whose manufacturers in China paid little mind to Chen's patent. To make matters worse, the underpowered knockoffs had a propensity to overheat and catch fire. Lawsuits followed, and the craze died down. I'm proud of my invention, but then people, just for money, made it so cheap, Chen said. Inventions are supposed to help the world, not make people unsafe. In any case, the hoverboard was never supposed to be Chen's breakout invention. It was just a diversion from his years-long effort to crack one of the toughest riddles in urban transportation, the last-mile problem of getting people from transit to their final destination. His latest attempt, which Chen calls IOTA Trax, was unveiled this month at the annual CES Gadget Show in Las Vegas. The Portland-based website Digital Trends earlier this month recognized the device as the top rideable technology at the show. And finally, Czech TV Victoria reports that BC ferries will go smoke-free. The company says the ban involves tobacco and all other smoking substances, along with e-cigarettes and other vaping products. Additionally, BC Ferries reminds that smoking is banned for passengers waiting inside their vehicles at the terminal and on the ferry. The company first warned customers of the change last summer to allow passengers and their employees to adjust. BC Ferries says many customers requested a smoke-free environment and say this action is for customer and employee health and wellness. No smoking on BC Ferries, but you can still expect delays. That's Cascadia Calling for this week on the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for the big deal. This week, Quick Wins gets to court. Christy Clark was told about the BC Liberal Multicultural Strategic Outreach Plan more than a year before the NDP released a leaked copy. That is according to email read in BC Provincial Court by Special Prosecutor David Butcher during the sentencing of an ex-government worker who pleaded guilty to breach of public trust. During a four-day hearing, which ended January 19th, Butcher asked Judge David St. Pierre to sentence Brian Bonney to 12 to 23 months house arrest. BC Liberal operative Bonney was hired to be communications director for the government's multiculturalism branch, and he was also tasked to carry out the party's plan to target ethnic voters in swing ridings for the 2013 election. St. Pierre will deliver his verdict on January 31st. The plan, which became known as Quick Wins, was authored in late 2011 by Clark's deputy chief of staff, Kim Hackstad. Butcher said an update of the plan was sent to Clark on February 22, 2012. A status update email from Hackstad to Gabe Garfinkel, Clark's executive assistant, read, "I told PCC, meaning Premier Christy Clark, I'd give her an update on this. Put it in her briefing folder." Hackstad resigned without severance on March 1, 2013, the same day that Clark told reporters in Prince George, "I was never involved in it. I didn't know about it until Wednesday, until it was brought forward in the House." During the March 4, 2013 question period, Clark said, "Had I known that this document existed, I would have put a stop to it immediately." Hackstad quietly reunited with Clark on her failed Vancouver Point Grey campaign team in the 2013 election. Bonney pleaded guilty on October 12, 2017. A trial had been scheduled to run October 16, 2017 to February 22, 2018, and would likely have overshadowed the election of a new BC Liberal leader on February 3rd. Clark resigned last summer after the party lost a confidence vote to the Green-supported NDP. Butcher said that while employed as a public servant, Bonney directed and supervised contractors to work on partisan activities to recruit support from ethnic communities that were critical to BC Liberal electoral success. Bonney was engaged in promoting the free enterprise anti-union position of this party while working as a public servant, Butcher said. He carried out his tasks with gusto and enthusiasm. Butcher cited the 9-month sentence given to Michael Sona for the conservative robocalls scandal in 2011 in Guelph, Ontario federal riding as a leading case. Butcher said Bonney's offense was worse because he was part of a plan to affect the democratic system across an entire province. Unlike Sona, Bonney had many years of experience. Bonney's defense lawyer Ian Donaldson asked St. Pierre for a discharge or conditional sentence and said there was no similar breach of public trust case because there was no bribery or theft on Bonney's part. Butcher said Bonney did receive personal benefit from the $140,000 a year job. When the scandal broke, the BC Liberals repaid $70,000 to the public treasury. Unfortunately, in the work he was doing, some of that work crossed the line between public and political or partisan, Donaldson said. He accepts that he was wrong in straying across that boundary, but the circumstances demonstrate, the emails and documents, that this wasn't Mr. Bonney on a lark. This was Mr. Bonney doing his work and doing his job and being instructed and directed and guided by others to do things and him not putting on the brakes. Butcher said the RCMP conducted a lengthy and challenging investigation into the case. Most of the significant evidence comes from email, mainly Gmail. Most of the key witnesses from the Liberal Party caucus and ministerial staff lawyered up, he said. Two former cabinet ministers, Harry Bloy and John Yap, did not, under the advice of lawyers, ever provide statements to the RCMP. Bloy, a lifelong friend of Bonney, was rewarded by Clark as multiculturalism minister after she became premier in 2011. Bloy was the only member of the government caucus to support Clark's successful campaign to become party leader. Butcher confirmed that the investigation found voting irregularities in the leadership contest that resulted in Clark defeating Kevin Falcon by 340 points on a regionally weighted preferential ballot system. The election rules did not prohibit proxy voting. Bloy used his connections to contractor Sapita Sarafpur and his connections, Butcher said. Those connections gathered blocks of pins, which were supplied to Mr. Bloy, who provided them to other Clark supporters, who entered them online. Block voting in a proxy process. The Liberal Party has acknowledged difficulties with this process, and it has adopted a different system. And, prudently, they sought advice from the RCMP about how to improve the integrity of this process. Butcher said it was still a mystery why the BC Liberals paid Bonney-hired ethnic outreach worker Sarafpur through Bonney's numbered company, and he agreed with St. Pierre that it was ironic for Bonney to work in a ministry that included the words open government on its shingle. Butcher conceded that there are some things about this case that are really quite strange. Bonney quit his government job for health reasons in early 2013 and had been hired as CEO of the BC Home Builders Association just 2 days before the scandal broke. He lost his job and has only worked on a commission basis since then, including a contract with the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Donaldson said that this experience has, quote, incinerated Bonney's existence. At the end of the hearing on January 19th, St. Pierre gave Bonney the opportunity to address the court. Bonney issued a short apology. Said Bonney, I think it is important that I say I do apologize to you. I apologize to the Crown. I apologize to the RCMP and the people in the courtroom. But, most importantly, I apologize to everyone in Victoria and the people of British Columbia for what's happened here. Outside the courtroom, Bonney declined to comment. It was not the first case involving a BC Liberal operative for St. Pierre, a 2009 appointed provincial court judge. St. Pierre was on the prosecution team for the trial of former ministerial aides David Bassey and Bob Virk. They maintained their innocence in the BC Rail privatization trial until they copped a plea bargain in October 2010 when the government agreed to pay their $6 million legal bills. Observers for the Bonney sentencing included BC Liberal Communications Director David Wasiluk, NDP MLA Ravi Kalan, and party worker Heather Libby. Wasiluk, a former caucus researcher, was reporting back to party executive director Emile Scheffel by text message. Kalan is a former aide to Adrian Dix, who filed a complaint with the RCMP about the quick win scandal when the BC Liberals released 10,000 pages of email after the 2013 election. That's the big deal on this week's edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of British Columbia's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the City of Toronto. Yes, the Big Smoke made the 20-city shortlist for Amazon's second headquarters, along with 19 American cities. 238 cities made bids last October, including Metro Vancouver and Langford, the Victoria suburb. The BC NDP government, however, refuses to show the BC bids, even though it spent $50,000 to help them. Langford, through the FOI laws, sent a copy to the Breaker, but 54 of the 55 pages are blacked out. Toronto, meanwhile, proactively released its entire Olympic-style bid book, nearly 200 pages long. No FOI necessary. In this case, the T in the T dot also stands for transparency. So, good on you, Toronto the good. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for January 21st, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas. Email me at bob@thebreaker.news. Again, the email address is bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter. Get updates to your inbox. And for news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. Again, on Twitter, that's The Breaker News. And on Facebook, thebreaker.news. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.